Yakripa tamaham vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Nityananda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hariharaya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha Hariharaya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha Gopal Govindaram Srimadhudan Giridhari Gopinath Madana Mohan Jaya Radha Madan Mohan Radha Madan Mohan Radhe Jaya Radha Madan Bihari Radha Madan Bihari Radhe Krishna Bhagavan ki Bhagavan ki Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Suiva been discussing one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam here, and Lord Chaitanya. Yes. When did Krishna appear? How many years ago? About 5,000. Yeah. Is that more than 50? Are you more than 50 years old? A lot more? A little bit. Okay. So is that more than 500 years ago? 5,000. Yeah, it's more than 500 years ago. Yeah, it's 500 times plus 500, plus 500, plus 500, plus 500. Ooh. Things have really changed, right? In the last, 5,000 years. So it was the end of the age of bronze. There were lots of wizards and different things running around doing stuff like that. You know? So then Lord Chaitanya appeared how many years ago? About 500, yeah, like that. And so then more, we can have some kind of relationship. But even then, in Chaitanya Charitamrita is describing so many Shaivite magicians and unusual things, for the current world. Yeah. But Lord Chaitanya came as the ideal preacher of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's his mission, right? He's not a manifest incarnation. He's a chana avatar, covered incarnation, like that. Aye. Now I think they're going to eat a big feast. They're waiting, probably very hungry, and playing very hard. So wondering what's for lunch. Yeah. So Lord Chaitanya came as the ideal preacher of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is this one of about 35 volumes, more than that, about 40 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. The essence of all the Vedas. Not only is it the essence of the Vedas, but it's also the best of all the Vedic literatures, like that. So we're very fortunate, Srila Prabhupada, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Lord Chaitanya sent this to us. You know, actually, we're more fortunate than people in India. I'm very sorry, but you people in India are less fortunate than we Westerners. Yes, because Srila Prabhupada is Paschacha Desha Tarine. He's come to deliver the Western people. So if you want to claim, if all the Indians want to claim to be Western people, okay. You can get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Right? So we're very fortunate. We're Paschacha Deshis. Where are you from? Western world. Ah, okay. You get my mercy. So Prabhupada ki. So Lord Chaitanya, he was showing us, he was preaching Srimad Bhagavatam, explaining the content to people, and also he was showing people how to appreciate Srimad Bhagavatam. One time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, only when you become a madman like me can you understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? So many kinds of madmen like that. But we have to become a madman like Lord Chaitanya. It's a very special kind of madman. But I'm telling you that you really can't understand Srimad Bhagavatam. It's probably says it's not ink on paper. It's actually the Supreme Personality of God in Himself there. And if the motive, when they're very much in the mode of goodness, you know, for example, in Ekadasi, twice a month, we're doing austerities, minimizing our eating, sleeping, and I can see the effect. You know your consciousness, you just stop thinking about your senses because you're not gratifying them, you're not stimulating them. So your mind is looking someplace else for stimulation, you know? And so then it starts to become more intellectual, you know? More in the mode of goodness. You know? So in the more we're in the mode of goodness, we can appreciate these stories and everything else. This is not ordinary. I got my first book when I was at the University of California at Davis in 72 or something like that. You know? And one devotee, Budi Manta, was selling books. Kind of fanatical guy, so I finally bought the book. And I was reading it. It was the Krishna book. It was a big book on Krishna's pastimes, the Krishna book. Volume 2, you know. And I was reading it. And the very first story is about the Shamtaka jewel. So it says that the Shamtaka jewel was stolen. And this took place before the appearance of Pradyumna, as described in the previous chapter. But that was the first chapter of the book. And I guess I read that. Kept kind of like looking at the book, and I read it again like that, you know, keep coming back. And I kind of like look and see if there was kind of like, you know, a chapter kind of hidden there or something like that. It's kind of, you know. And finally I noticed in the back of the thing it said Krishna book volume 2, you know. And the devotee had to sell the volume 2s as well as the volume 1, so he sold me a volume 2 without telling me, selling me volume 2. You know. So I kept, and after that I found the volume 1 in a library like that, you know. You know. But I was reading it, you know, and I was following some kind of austerities at that point. You know, Teshan Tvanta Gata Papam Jananam Punya Karmanam Te Dvandva Moha Nirmukta Bhajante Mam. Yeah, we can only worship Krishna when we're free from these simple reactions like that. We're in the mode of goodness to some degree, usually. So I was doing some kind of yoga by then. I think I was vegetarian by then. And then I was kind of meditating on the book, which is what you're supposed to do. Actually, the original Krishna book was bigger. I think it's about 13-point type. It's very big. Yeah. If you're studying communication, they'll tell you that 10-point type, 11-point type, and that's about as far as you can go. And you hit 12-point type, you don't see, you don't read anymore. You see every single word like that. You know? It's a different kind of consciousness with 12-point type and above. And so the original Krishna book probably printed them that way. And so I remember when I was reading it, when actually I began to appreciate it, I was going through each word like that and trying to like, you know, adjust them all so they fit together and, yeah, it was okay. It was like constructing, you know, a deity like that, the book. So it's different than reading the book. It's actually, you know, meditating on it, taking it into your heart. So I was going through these different phases and, you know, and I was reading it and intellectually, I was very satisfied because Prabhupada was answering every single question about philosophy I had, every philosophy I come in contact with, he was presenting it. He was discussing its advantages and disadvantages. And he was coming back to the point that God's a person, we're all people, we should worship him. You know, now I had a Christian background, nice Christian background, so it was, you know, I agreed. Yeah. And then what else? So that was very important. It was very intellectually to satisfy my endeavors like that. And the other thing was, and if you read the stories in the Krishna book, it says that, you know, that Kalyavana, Jarasandha, he attacks Mathura, you know, with Akshahinis of soldiers. And, you know, then Krishna came out with a little army, which is nothing in comparison to the great army of Jarasandha. But none of them were killed, whereas on the other side, all of Jarasandha's soldiers were being killed and slaughtered. Then Balaram was feeling a little bit, you know, envious, not envious, but challenged like this. So he came out with his soldiers and he started killing more people. And the ocean of blood created by Krishna began to overflood when Balaram came out like that. And the heads were like floating turtles, and the horses were like little islands floating there, and all the jewelry from the cut-off, you know, bodies was like jewels, and the hands were like seaweed. Like, you know. And it says that all the people, all the citizens of Mathura were standing on the... all the citizens of Mathura were standing on the parapets and, you know, the walls of Mathura, looking at Krishna defending the city from this great army come to kill them. And they're all very, very enthusiastic and cheering Krishna and the soldiers and their sons and brothers, you know, for chopping off more heads and like that. And it said those who were cowards were shocked by this. But those who were heroes were very enthused to see this, you know, great ocean of blood and everything else, you know. And then it describes, what else, that somebody, that Sudama Vipra, he went to see Krishna, who had been his class friend. And he was a very poor person. He had almost nothing, didn't have enough clothes actually to cover himself properly, you know, holes in his clothes. And he was very satisfied just being a devotee. But his wife was always begging him, and not for herself, you know, for seeing her husband, who was such a nice person, not suffering like that. She always felt unhappy, you know. So she said, you should go see your friend, Krishna. He's living in Dwarka with so much opulence, and he'll certainly give you a little bit of opulence to live, you know, in a simple way. So Sudama Vipra went there, and he thought he had gone to Vaikuntha, and the whole story. And then Krishna was so happy to see him. He said, sit on my bed. He was dusty, covered from traveling. He didn't have nice clothes. And all the princesses were amazed. Well, who is this person? Krishna's embracing him. Who did Krishna embrace in Dwarka? There's two people. Rukmini and? Balaram. But he's embracing this brahmana. And it didn't even look like a very clean person or like well-to-do. So all the princesses are looking, well, who is this person? The maidservants. You know? Then Krishna sat him on his own bed and washed his feet. You know? He said, oh, I'm really remembering our time together in school and what happened, all these things like that. And he said, oh, you must have brought me some gift from home like that. So Sudama Vipra had a little bit of chipped rice like that. And it wasn't even really edible for anybody. You know? Yes, he was feeling very embarrassed. And then Krishna said, oh, what is that in your bag there? And he took some and took it and was chewing it. Oh, very nice. Like that. Very wonderful, you know. Like that. So then I think he went to take a second bite, mouthful. It's either then a second or a third morsel. And Rukmini Devi stopped him and said, my dear Lord, you know, wherever people are, you know, wherever you are indebted to people, I'm personally obliged to go and reward them like that. So simply by taking one morsel of rice from this poor brahmana, you've already guaranteed his wealth of this life and the next life, like that. So you take any more, I won't be able to reciprocate, you know, with him like that. So Krishna desisted. So Sudama Vipra didn't ask anything, but he went back to his house thinking how nice Krishna was and how wonderful he was, and he didn't offer me anything. And so, because he knows I'm a poor person, if I got something, I'd be carried away, couldn't control my senses. So he got back and he said, well, where's my house? I used to be, this road turns here, the river's there. What is this, some rich man's house here? What's happened? You know, beautiful gardens with peacocks running around and nice little houses made of marble and patios and gardens and different servants taking care of the garden, watering the thing. And he thought, it seems like my house, you know, but it's been converted, it's changed, like that. And his wife came out dressed in beautiful sari and bangles and received him, offered him obeisances, like that, you know. So he was thinking this only can be because of Krishna. Some magical influence because of Krishna, like that, you know. So the whole story finishes. And in the end it says, you know, Sukadeva Goswami says, and Prabhupada says, anybody who follows the, here's the story of Sudama Vipra will become as qualified as Sudama Vipra and will go back to the spiritual world at the end of his lifetime. It's like that. It's by hearing this one story like that. So I was reading this Krishna book, and you know, it was like oceans of blood, and and becoming, going back to Godhead just by hearing stories, and it's just on and on like this, you know, one after another. So finally, my mind was, you know, reacted. My mind said, this has either got to be, you know, the absolute truth or the biggest lie you've ever heard, like that, like that. So my mind agreed to that. It was either you know, but then my mind went to the next step, which is, well, if it's either an absolute lie or the absolute truth, either case, it's absolute, right? So looking at the book and I'm realizing it's a fact. You know, I read a lot of science fiction, the best authors in the world, but I've never read anything like this. You know, this is just unbelievable, you know. So it's a fact. You know, this book is the absolute truth. I realized that at the point. So I started, you know, reading it more carefully, like, you know, every sentence and every word, and I couldn't penetrate it beyond that point. This is the absolute truth. It's self-evident. You know? So Srila Prabhupada is so nice. He gives us, you know, this literature and translating and commenting in a perfectly lucid fashion. Different people have different kinds of abilities, talents. Close the door on the prasadam factory in there. So we're chasing chapatis all over the place in there. Come back. Yeah. On the grill. So he's given us this with his own ability. And that also gives us the conviction that we're dealing with Srila Prabhupada, we're dealing with a pure devotee. Right? He doesn't do anything fantastic. He doesn't make gold. He doesn't walk on water. You can't read your mind. You know? What does he do? He just presents things as they are without changing them, with no passion. Right? Sometimes you meet other people, they're talking about Krishna's pastimes and the gopis. It's interesting. But you can feel there's a little passion, a little bit of enjoying these, you know, material relationships to some degree like that. Prabhupada is completely lucid. But at the same time, he was not boring. He's presenting things. You begin to appreciate, the more I'm in the mode of goodness, this touches me very deeply. So then we become inspired to do austerities, to become purified, so we can, you know, get charged up, right? Get that. So this is one verse. This is Narada Muni, first canto. There's 12 cantos. And Narada Muni is talking to Vyasadeva. Usually the guru appears when people are having problems, right? What's Vyasadeva's problem over there?
He's dissatisfied.
Why is he dissatisfied?
Because all of his words, he has no conclusion to everything that he's doing. It's all material activity.
Yeah. He specifically was—he saw it when he was there. It was again the age of bronze, and people just remembered things by hearing them. What's your name? Yeah. Wow, he can remember that. See, but you know, in the future, people won't have memories like that. You know, forget them. Somebody who knows the whole Maha Mantra will be like considered a great pundit like that.
Yeah. One of my friend's father got Alzheimer's, he doesn't know his name.
Yeah.
Doesn't know his house.
Ronald Reagan, he was the most powerful man on the face of the earth, and by the time he died, he couldn't even remember he'd been president of the United States. Yeah. So, but as the Kali Yuga goes on, it becomes a natural situation like that. Yeah. So Vyasadeva, he saw this. So the Veda, which was, you know, this sound, this communicated to the student like that, knowledge, Veda. He said, we have to write this down. So he was Vyas. He divided it up. Veda, Vyas. He divided it into four Vedas. Which are? You know the four Vedas? You know one of them? Yeah.
Rig.
Looking up there. Rig, Sama. Yajur. Atharva. Atharva Veda, yeah, like that. Yeah. So he divided them up and he put them in terms of people's occupational duties with hymns and prayers. And then somebody wrote them down. He needed a secretary. Who was the secretary? Ganesh. Where did he get the pen from? Where did the pen come from? His pen. You don't know. You know this. Ekadanta. He broke off one of his tusks. You know that? Yeah, that's why he only has one tusk. You know, got the pen. You know, it's good. So on. Yeah, so he was his transcribing for Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva was dictating, and then Ganapati was writing like that. You know, he was so fast. So then the Vedas are there, in the age of Kali. And so Vyasadeva did all this. And he thought, well, let me attract people to spiritual life. You know, so he's writing about vegetarianism, animal rights, what hatha yoga, you know, reduce stress, reduce your blood pressure. He tells so many stories like this, you know. And he also mentions the purpose of these things is to worship God, you know, to become advanced in spiritual life. But that's not the main content of what he's talking about. And so he's feeling unhappy. He's done all these things, you know. Opened a vegetarian restaurant. He's been marched for the animals, you know, free the experimental animals, you know, all these things, you know. So Narada Muni comes and says, well, why are you unhappy? What's the problem? You know, you're doing all these things, you know. And then he tells him, yeah, you're right. Your suspicion is correct. He confirms it with Guru. You've failed to directly glorify the Supreme Lord without any kind of compromise like that. Yeah, you've talked about him, but people, they'll just take all the things for sense gratification, for enjoyment, and they won't really follow the austerities like that. Yeah? So you have to write Srimad Bhagavatam, directly glorifying Krishna in his incarnations like that. So he did that. So Narada Muni, when he first comes, they're talking about what is the philosophy, what is the situation, who are we? Can we be satisfied, you know, by just hatha yoga and, you know, vegetarian diet and, you know, saving people for sense gratification and, you know, this kind of thing. So one verse here, which we've been discussing before. Please repeat. Idam. This.
He.
Certainly. Pungsaha. Of everyone. Tapasa. By austerities. Shutasya, by study of the Vedas. Va, or Svistasya, sacrifice. Suktasya, spiritual education. Idam hi pumsas tapasa shutasya va Svistasya suktasya taburidatayo. Learned circles have positively concluded that the infallible purpose of the advancement of knowledge, right? What is the always unfailing purpose of the advancement of knowledge? What is it? Well, we're going to find out. Okay. Now, what is the advancement of knowledge? Austerities, study of the Vedas, sacrifice, chanting of hymns, charity, right? It doesn't talk about mental speculation here, how to advance knowledge. How do you advance knowledge? By austerities, by studying the Vedas, by sacrifice, by charity. That's how you advance knowledge. It's different than the idea of knowledge you find in the modern world. There's just memorized facts, memorized processes, like that. Learn how to speculate with your mind. Okay. Learned circles have positively concluded that the infallible purpose of the advancement of knowledge, namely austerity, study of the Vedas, sacrifice, chanting of hymns, and charity, culminates in transcendental descriptions of the Lord, who is defined in choice poetry. Okay, Prabhupada's purport. So I personally heard from Bhakti Swarup Damodara's lips that Prabhupada told him he wrote this for preaching to the scientists, the rascal scientists, like that. Also the good scientists, too. Human intellect is developed for advancement of learning. Right? Develop human intellect for advancement of learning in what? Bhakti yoga? No, art. Science, philosophy, physics, chemistry, psychology, economics, political science. That's why we want to actually develop all these things. That's why we're becoming human beings. By culture of such knowledge, a human society can attain perfection of life. By art, music, psychology, you know, chemistry, can attain perfection of life. This perfection of life culminates in the realization of the Supreme Being, Vishnu. Not Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's not a supreme being. Right? The Shruti therefore directs that those who are actually advanced in learning should aspire for the service of Lord Vishnu. Unfortunately, persons who are enamored by the external beauty of Vishnu Maya do not understand that culmination of perfection or self-realization depends on Vishnu. Vishnu Maya means sense enjoyment, which is transient and miserable. Those who are entrapped by Vishnu Maya utilize advancement of knowledge for sense enjoyment. Right? You eat, This is a big. This is one of the biggest sense enjoyments, right? How many restaurants are there in Boise, Idaho? A lot? Two? Three? Four? How many mortuaries are there? Are there more restaurants than mortuaries? Yeah. People enjoy eating. How many supermarkets are there? Are they big? They're big supermarkets? Yeah, how many kinds of ice cream can you get? Right? There's just rows and rows. So this is how to enjoy. Basically, you know, material enjoyment means how you can satisfy your sexual appetite and your desire to eat. If somebody eats well and has good arrangement for romance, oh, he's a very good person, very fortunate. Immaterial consciousness. Yeah? So here we're talking about people want sense enjoyment, not the service of Krishna. Yeah? That's why you go looking for a job, so you get money. Right? How do you judge a job? In terms of how much money you can make? That's one of the important principles. Yeah. Other things too. But everybody, how much money I can make. And money means you can transfer that. You can go to the supermarket there with your money. You give them your money. And they give you these things. You go home like, I want strawberry ice cream and some dark chocolate sauce like that. Okay. And I want, what else? And I want, I'm a vegetarian. I'll buy these, you know, microwave enchiladas. What else? Yeah. You make all this sense gratification based upon mental concoction. That's the material world like that. So we're thinking about all these things. So what happens? Yeah, probably every time you eat, right? If you really satisfy your belly, then what happens afterwards? You feel sick. I eat so much. I have acid in my stomach, and this and that, like that. If you really satisfy your stomach, like that. You know? But if you do austerities and don't eat, so you're still hungry and you stop like that, then you maybe feel okay. It's kind of balanced. I feel good like that. But you can't really gratify your senses. You got to do austerities and stop yourself. My Aunt Sally, she's my godmother, she said it's a very, very good exercise for reducing weight like that, for reducing fat. Prabhupada says most people go to yogis to reduce fat. He says fat-reducing yogis are very popular like that. So this exercise, so what is that exercise for reducing? It's very simple. It's guaranteed to reduce your weight. So what is that? He said when you feel you're half full, put both your hands firmly on the table and push. It's guaranteed to reduce your weight. And it works. Firmly and push. Makes a big difference, you know. Yeah. So we have this desire. We're in a more. We're thinking, how can I gratify my senses? And I want to get that service. I want to get the service of my senses. But the culmination of life is getting the service of Vishnu. It's very rare. People want a government job. If you get a government job, it's kind of nice, pay good money, think, this is it. Found my position. He's got it. You got a government job. Yeah, but Prabhupada says this. Because it's long-term, it's stable, respected, you know. So same way, Vishnu is also offering a job. You can work for Vishnu, like that. Huh, I never knew that before. Yes, you can work for Vishnu. But that's more stable. Yeah, the position is more stable, like that. Yeah? And also, he's not a neurotic guy, with horrible deadlines and doing things like that. You know. I remember one time I was in Sankirtan with Krishna Karuna, doing stupid books, and this guy said, get a life, man, get a real job. And this spontaneous, he said, like what? Putting stripes in toothpaste? And the guy was completely... This spontaneous, the Krishna supplied the words. This is the modern world. I mean, the studies in psychology and economics show that actually, what is it, about, how is it, 2 hours a day? About 10 hours a week is sufficient to maintain your body. Almost any culture you're in, if you're just working properly, about 2 hours a day. Of course, during the harvest season, you work more. But during the winter season, you don't do anything. You know, so about average a year, 2 hours a day is enough to maintain your body. But what is everything else for? For different kinds of vanity and prestige and social position and different kinds of psychological adjustment like that. You know? And so all these jobs are all useless, putting stripes in toothpaste. Probably is down on lipstick. I'm sorry, but he's like really criticizing lipstick, probably like that. See, who will die without lipstick? You know, I will die without. No. So again, you go to the market, you go to some store. I don't know how they have here, some drugstore. How many kinds of lipstick are there? It's an ocean, isn't it? It's like every time I was looking at it, I was amazed. It's got this like entire row, like this long, different kinds of colors, and you know, lady this and miss that. You know, it's like, oh, this is some kind of colored wax, I guess. So you're, it takes chemists, right? You can become a chemist, right? You manufacture lipstick, like that. You're well paid. So, but Vishnu, no, all the work that Vishnu does, Vishnu wants you to do is practical. It's very satisfying. It's very useful. You feel like you're doing something worthwhile. Yeah? And also, it's guaranteed employment. It's ever increasing. So this is the point, is it's saying that learned circles have concluded. Here we go on here. When advancement of knowledge is applied in the service of the Lord, the whole process becomes absolute. The personality of Godhead and His name, fame, glory, etc., are all non-different from Him. Therefore, all the sages and devotees of the Lord have recommended that the subject matter of art, science, philosophy, physics, chemistry, psychology, and all other branches of knowledge should be wholly and solely applied in the service of the Lord. Art, literature, poetry, painting, etc., may be used in glorifying the Lord. The fiction writers, poets, and celebrated literateurs are generally engaged in writing of sensuous subject matters. But if they turn their attention towards the service of the Lord, they can describe the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Valmiki was a great poet. Similarly, Vyasadeva, a great writer. And both of them have absolutely engaged themselves in delineating the transcendental activities of the Lord. And by doing so, they have become immortal. Similarly, science and philosophy should also be applied in the service of the Lord. Yeah. There is no use presenting dry speculative theories for sense gratification. Philosophy and science should be engaged to glorify the Lord. Advanced people are eager to understand the absolute truth in the medium of science. We're discussing this. And therefore, a great scientist should endeavor to prove the existence of God on a scientific basis. Right? So Prabhupada did this. One specific example is in the Bhaktivedanta Institute. Prabhupada started this for specifically working in the area of science because it's the most attractive, potent thing right now. Other things are there. And they're gaining, actually. But science still is very respected and sought after, attractive. Because it's technology. So I probably established the Bhaktivedanta Institute. So one time I was with Dayadara Das. He's kind of like a mad scientist guy like that. We went to Stanford University. Is Stanford University the best university in the world? Second best. What's the best? MIT, I don't know. Probably have a lot of competition about, But definitely, people could say, there are more Nobel laureates between Berkeley and Stanford, that area, than any place else in the world. So one of the very best universities in the world. And the scientists are there, are very respected people with many badges and like that. So we somehow or other, he was talking to one, I made an appointment to talk with one biologist. And he's talking with him, And the guy in the beginning thinks, my God, how did I arrange this interview? This guy's a nut, a madman. I was kind of listening, But after some time, he began to realize this person knows what he's talking about, And he asked him, what's your background? Well, I have a PhD in embryology, neuroembryology, Dayadara. I said, where'd you get it? From Baylor. You know Baylor? It's the medical school for the University of Houston, University of Texas, like that. So very respectable. So he goes, okay, let's hear your argument again now. So what he was talking about is polarization of the blastula. How many people here know what polarization of the blastula is? Your life is one-third wasted. Like that. Okay. It's a famous story of the scholar and the boatman, right? Yeah. Okay. Let's start off here. You got one spermatozoa and one ovum. He's talking science talk. They combine. You got one cell. It divides into two. Two divide into four. Okay, 4, 8, 16.
Oh, no.
16.
32.
Yeah. I think when we get to about something like 512, or whatever it is there, it forms a little ball. It's called the blastula. And so many species of life, they go through this phase of development. Okay, so at that point, there is polarization. One part of the blastula decides, I'm going to be the head. other part decides, I'm going to be the tail, you know. And then you start getting, you know, head developing, arms developing, hind legs developing, tail developing, gut developing, brains developing, like that, you know. So why does the blastula polarize? What causes the polarization? You're a scientist. What do you think causes it? What would be your general explanation from general knowledge of science? Why do these cells start becoming heads and eyes and stuff like that? What causes that?
Some forces around some DNA.
Okay, there you go. Second generation is better. Yeah. Yeah. So the genetic material is there in the cell and it's telling us, okay, this and that. And that. But why does one cell then, you know, decide to become a head? They all have identical DNA information. This is where the argument went. Because every single one is identical DNA, right? Yeah, so why does one decide to become heads and eyes like that?
One must be the boss.
Huh?
You see that? One must be the boss.
One must be the boss.
Maybe. This, you know, biologists don't accept this. Right? So they're next, huh?
It's pre-programmed.
But they all have the same program though, at this point. Every single cell is identical. Identical DNA.
Cells have a consensus as to who's going to become the head and who's going to become the tail. So the cells are aware of each other's existence. That's why you have certain cells that becomes a head and certain head that becomes the arms. Because they have a consensus. Even though they have the same genetic material, they always have a consensus.
They have what?
No, they
have the same genetic material, but...
Consensus. But they have a consensus. They know that, okay, you have five people and all five people are the same. They have two arms, two legs.
Yeah.
But only one of them is the leader. Why? Because the other is accepting.
Again, because this argument, this is between a candidate for a Nobel Prize and a PhD in embryology. So where they took the argument, he said next that you know, the possibility is in microenvironment, because the microenvironment then stimulates this DNA then to take a certain potentials and develop in a certain way. This is kind of your consensus argument, but. Then the other counter-argument is that the microenvironment is identical for every single one also, because they all have the same surrounding cells like that. So then there actually have been studies where they've tried gravity, right? Maybe gravity is causing this to happen.
The
force. Yeah, external forces. But what happens then is that they've had pregnant rats. They've hung pregnant rats upside down during their pregnancy, and gravity doesn't cause it. So at least at this point, the guy is admitting that we don't really have a real explanation for polarization of the blastula like that. Even if you go through the consensus argument, you're going to come up with the consensus also requires that people have, you know, different, they just make this decision on this and so on like that. So his argument went back and forth. So this is application of science, right? So Diodorus' suggestion was, why don't you consider the possibility that along with the spermatozoa, is also coming manas and buddhi, from the Sanskrit perspective, is also coming a formed subtle body. I have a certain karma. I have a certain desire. I want that when I come into a room, everybody respects me. I want when I want to eat, I eat. And I don't want to think about things too much. What kind of body do you get? A lion. Yeah? If a hungry lion came into the room right now, everybody would respect him. Yeah? No, they're powerful. I mean, break your back with one strike, you know, like that, you know, so on. And king of the beasts, they're just, you know, when a lion roars, I mean, literally, you can hear him from here to the university, and it will terrify you when you hear a lion roaring like that. Oh, God, I don't want to meet that guy. It's terrifying. So you can get that kind of body. And it's not like there's quantification. There's 8,400,000 kinds of species of life. So I got to show a video here, you know. But this is just to show you that, you know, when this area, and afterwards the whole person was considering a new idea, well, there does seem to be a reasonable argument then for a subtle form which is stimulating the development of this gross potential in this DNA form like that. Yeah? Yeah. So this is the point we're making, you know, is that you can talk about serving God in a general sense like that. I want to serve God. I want to be good. I want to serve God. But at a certain point, it comes to vritti. In the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about vritti, professional devotional service like that. And so we have to take our service to that level. If you're going to be a scientist, you have to use it in relationship to God. You know, if you're going to be a lawyer, in relationship to God. Otherwise, you'll always be contaminated by this, you know, selfish desires for vanity, for fame. I know more than you do. I'm stronger than you. I'm richer than you. And of course, Indian immigrants is probably more of these subtle things. You know, I know more, I'm stronger, I have better economic development. But this is still the same thing. You know, it's not taking us away from serving God to serving our own ego and personality like that. So we've been also developing different programs. In South America, we've had very, very good respect, good success in many ways. And I want to show you now one video, because we're putting a big festival on in September. And it's being sponsored by our organization, NEOS, the North American Institute for Oriental and Classical Studies in Tennessee, and Ricardo Palma University, San Marcos University is our poster, the Ambassador of India, Concitec, which is the science curriculum designers for the whole state, whole country. They're all very interested in this Vedic view of life, Vedic description of nature, science, art, music, dance, culture. And one way that many people, even Nobel laureates, we work with Charles Towns, many Nobel laureates like that. They're also very convinced by, not going to work, I don't think. Yeah. It's made it worse. It's got to go forward, actually. Okay. That's okay. Yeah. People are very, very convinced by culture. So besides these academic sessions in September, we're also going to have a cultural presentation of the Mahabharata. Now, the Mahabharata is too big to do in just one session like that. And very, very good Peruvian actors are helping us. In Peru, an actor makes a minimum of $40 a day, like that. It's a different economy. But they're working for $20 a day just to survive because they like the project so much. We showed them the Indian Mahabharata, and they were so amazed. You know, it's a very nice culture down there. And they can really appreciate the Indian culture very, very closely, like that. So finally, what we've done, we're working on this 45-minute presentation for very high-class people and university audiences and everything else like that. But we did a five-minute trailer, promotional thing of it. And hopefully now we can see this. Hewlett-Packard budgets $3,000 a minute for movies, $3,000 a minute. So this is 5 minutes. How much would it cost? $15,000. So we did it for $4,000. Okay. So now hopefully we're going to see this. The Spanish is very good. To do the English, we had to do it real quick. So the English is a little bit rough, but you can understand like that. Okay. Now you're watching television, and suddenly this advertisement comes on television. Hopefully. This is using everything in the service of Krishna.
We started that at 12:30. She wants to take some shots.
Huh?
We'll start right at 12:30.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Having the same problem.
Huh?
Having the same problem. This type of risk cannot be played.
You didn't try it before?
The laptop doesn't connect to the TV.
But you didn't try this before? I thought you were going to try it. Aha! You're going into combat with an unused weapon. This is suicide.
Yeah. I can just bring my laptop out and put it on.
Okay, we'll try it. We'll give you a second chance here. Like that. Yeah. But I'm ready for this. Okay. I guess. Anyway, whatever. So we can talk a little bit more. We also have other DVD we can show later on, which is about the deities in Peru. Very, very beautiful deities. Radha Madan Bihari. Here we have Radha Bunky Bihari, the Radha Madan Bihari. So one devotee did a very, very beautiful DVD with music and the different dresses like that. So many things. This is art, and this is culture. And also in science, we're working them. We've had several international congresses so far with George Wald, who else? Dalai Lama, Charles Towns, and many Nobel laureates participating. Because they're also very interested. The Vedas supply Charles Towns, he got his Nobel Prize for the laser. And he was saying, I'm interested in this because it seems that Oriental philosophies of nature, there's no Cartesian split like that. Science and religion aren't separated. And also they give a better description of reality like that. Ayurveda is still a very, very superior system of medicine in most cases to allopathy. And then you have so many things. Yeah, there was batteries And Vedas, they had batteries 1,000 years before Christ. So many things like that. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Radha Gopinatha. Radha Gopinatha. Radhe. He's an electrical engineer. They're both. They diagnosed the problem and found the solution. The problem was it wasn't plugged in. Yeah. There it goes. Right? No. Still not working. Radha Gopinatha. Gopinatha Radhe. Rupa Goswami Prandanahe. Okay, the DVD is in the DVD player, in the computer. Want to change? Put the television set back up. Put the. Okay. Okay. So come closer. We're going to watch this on the screen here. Oh my God, it's terrible. Huh? You should have checked it first, though.
I tried it, but it doesn't
work. No, you should have checked it first. If it didn't work, you should have told me. Yeah. All right. Come closer. Come closer. I guess you have to stand up with it there. Yeah. Okay. Actually, they give us a version to show on television, too. This is the Spanish version. What you have to do is eject it. Yeah. And put it in and automatically read it. Yeah. Okay. Now when it comes in, it should come up with a Spanish-English option. Is it reading it? Okay. Okay, I picked the English option. Okay, so this is our, here we go. No whining.
Thousands of years ago, in the mists of time, the decline of character and leadership opened a new era. An era based on envy and greed, the age of Kali, the age of iron. In this scene,
these are all the Gurukula children in our school there.
Taking it to a higher path. This is the history of the Mahabharata, the history of Krishna, the poetic history of the mankind. After hearing it, we can never be the same. The eternal fight between good and evil. Rivalry between the two branches of the same family, the Kurus and the Pandavas. They fight for the possession of the kingdom. Hastinapur, the battle of Kurukshetra, will decide this. In this history will appear great sages like Bhishma, Drona, and Vidura. They know everything. They are fully conscious, and yet they must fight in vain against inevitable destiny. Our narration begins with the story of Queen Kunti, mother of the Pandavas, loyal devotee of Lord Krishna, our link to the Supreme, gifted with beauty and character, virtuous and righteous. A great sage, thankful for her help, bestowed her with a blessing that she could invoke any demigod in order to have their offspring. With Dharma, demigod of relation, she engendered Yudhisthira, the perfect image of righteousness, virtue, and renunciation. With Vaju, the demigod of the wind, she gave birth to Bhima, the most powerful and affectionate of all men, endowed with immeasurable strength. With Indra, the king of heaven, Arjuna, the perfect warrior, the world's greatest archer, the most loyal friend. They were the Pandavas, and Yudhisthira, the legitimate heir to the throne of Hastinapura. Along with them was their wife, Drupadi, fire-born princess, the nearest point of desire, born for the death of many warriors. And confronting them, bold with arrogance, the Kuru dynasty, their cousins, all children of Dhritarashtra, born with the hands of an emperor, was mocked by fate, with eyes blind from birth. Dhritarashtra was to stand as regent of the throne until his nephew, Yudhisthira, achieved adulthood. Nevertheless, if he could not have the throne, he embraced it entirely as a treasure for his own sons. Duryodhana was Dhritarashtra's firstborn, ambitious, thirsting for power, the seed of catastrophe. And always by his side, his younger brother, Dushasana, living like the shadow of his older brother and his brutal servitor of the Kuru's greed. All these characters will meet at the key moments of the Mahabharata. The platform was the game of dice, where the Kurus would count on the help of Sakuni, their sinister uncle, dark in his intentions, making friends out of enemies, carrying destiny in his dice, would challenge both dynasties for the kingdom, for honor, for freedom. Here they are, the Pandavas, the Kurus, Krishna, playing the game as they move on their way to the final, inevitable battle, to a new king, to a new destiny.
Thank you very much. So, if you want to see the full movie, you have to go to Peru on the 22nd of September this year. Otherwise, we hope next year to come back with a full movie like that. So this is what we're designed to do. As a conclusion of Vyasadeva, whatever your profession is, whatever your nature is, we have to bring it to this professional level of art, music, science, poetry, culture. And ultimately, we see this conflict between good and evil, right? And to establish a proper path for people to become happy in this world. Otherwise, it only leads to self-destructive vanity. Krishna always wants the devotees to be in charge of things. Why? Because it's the best arrangement for everybody. He's not partial. The demons only end up in causing problems for themselves. So, Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.